40 greetings to all of our Voice of America listeners. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Well, all week long, we've been hearing from Thea LaFond, who is set to represent her home country of Dominica in Rio in the triple jump. Today, we feature the final segment of our four-part interview with LaFond. Our Sonny Young and Ben Cento asked her what it takes to become an Olympic athlete and to compete for your home country, starting with her daily training routine.
Course of a normal day, I will wake up, as I always say, thank the creator for waking me up, and then I drink one glass of water and I knock out 500 crunches before we do anything. I'll go on through my day. I'll eat my first meal is often fruits, maybe with some type of protein. Maybe it's some grilled chicken left over from dinner that night. And then I put on my workout gear and I drive to University of Maryland. Sometimes I'll start with a track workout where I'll have short sprints, bounds, maybe some short pop-ups into the pit, just working on timing and explosiveness. That'll probably take about an hour, hour and a half. From then, I go down the hill to the varsity team house at Maryland where I lift, and I'm there for about 2 hours, most likely squatting, cleans, explosive onto blocks, throwing med balls to walls, and biking, getting some more cardio in. Then it's about 4 hours have passed doing this. Once I'm done with that, I head upstairs where I get treatment. I get any pains fixed. My heel tends to hurt. Ultrasound on that heel, get some icing done. I may do a cool down and some light stretching. I go home and I shower and
go back
eat.
To bed.
Eat. Funny thing is, most of the time, I'm not even done for the day. I may go home, get something to eat, shower. But for most of the year, I worked in the afternoon, so it was eat and head to work. And the coach track and field. So I do it, and then I go back ahead and I coach it.
Have you gotten any sort of reaction from the people you coach about your upcoming Olympic trip?
Oh, yes. They have been so supportive. These teenagers are unbelievable, some unbelievable athletes, truly the future of the sport in general. And they have been so happy. I've gotten so many texts, so many calls. Many of the calls I answer is just them screaming on the other side. And they've really become a second family and very warm and welcoming. Even the parents have been kind of supporting and tracking my endeavors throughout the year. And so it's been a beautiful reception.
Thea, you have dual citizenship, United States and Dominica. When did you start competing for Dominica?
I started competing when I was 16 years old. It's because I started taking my weightlifting more seriously. And the weight coach that worked in Kennedy, Chris Paul, he told me, he was like, wait, you have dual citizenship? I was like, yeah. And he was like, why aren't you competing for your country? There are youth events like this. And I was like, I never knew about that. And he being Jamaican, had dual citizenship also and has been competing for his country since he was like 13. So it was through that kind of portal that I was able to access this world of youth athletics. And it was through that everything started. So at 16 years old, he also came with me to my first trip, which was Montego Bay, Jamaica, which was very ironic. And that's where it all kind of started, Carifta Games.
Wow, okay.
You mentioned you went to the University of Maryland, which is also just outside of Washington. Could you talk about your collegiate career and how that compares to the international level?
My collegiate career was just amazing. I really have to thank the University of Maryland staff for all that they do, from my teachers to my coaches to my recovery team to my weightlifting team. They were always very supportive. And one of the things that I do appreciate from them that I miss a lot is having a team experience. Once you graduate, you don't necessarily have a team of like 50, 60 members anymore. This year has been very much a more individual journey, and that is one of the biggest differences between the two. My collegiate experience was unbelievable. I tried so many events. I very luckily and on a blessed basis got very far in those individual events. And I definitely feel like I left my name in the history books of the University of Maryland. This 1 year outside the school has been, I can't lie, it has been difficult. I have been traveling a lot more than I did at the university, a lot more out of the country, and the competition has gone harder. But that's just all part of growth and development as a young athlete.
Well, Thea, we wish you nothing but the best of luck as you prepare to go to your first Olympics. Maybe just some quick closing thoughts for our VOA listeners as you get ready to go to Rio.
I just want to say thank you for even the opportunity to be here. It's truly just humbling. I am. I started off as a little black female from an island that no one even knows, and now people are willing to bring me in and hear my story, and that is just inspiring. And I hope this touches a few other young females and young athletes in this sport and inspires them to work hard and cultivate their dream.
Thanks again to Sunny Young and Ben Cento for that interview, and I second what Sunny said there. Best of luck to Thea as she prepares to go for the gold in Rio. Well, runner Santino Kenyi isn't just a first-time Olympic athlete. The 16-year-old running in the 1500-meter event in Rio is part of South Sudan's first-ever Olympic team. Jason Patinkin caught up with Kenyi in Juba just before he flew to Rio de Janeiro to compete in the 2016 Summer Games.
The world's youngest nation will send three athletes to compete in this year's Summer Games in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. One of them is Santino Kenyi, who will compete in the 1500-meter race. Only 16 years old, Kenyi knows he is making history for his country.
I really feel proud and I'm really very happy for the first time as we are representing our nation.
Though this is the first time South Sudan has sent an official team, it's not the first time a South Sudanese has competed in an Olympic Games. In 2012, South Sudanese runner Gwar Mading Makere took 47th in the marathon at the London Summer Games, but he ran under an Olympic flag because South Sudan wasn't yet recognized by the International Olympic Committee. Makere will return to the Olympics this year. Also going to Rio is Margaret Rumat Hassan, who will run the 200-meter race. Five more South Sudanese athletes will compete as part of the first-ever team of refugees. Kenyi says they are collectively paving the way for future South Sudanese competitors.
We are glad that next time also the new generation who are coming will also represent. And we are just like we're opening the door.
Kenyi's journey to the Olympics hasn't been easy. South Sudan has experienced civil war since 2013, with tens of thousands killed. While millions have fled the country, Kenyi has continued training in the capital, Juba, even when fighting breaks out on the city's streets.
I was training with the war, so people were fighting and I'm training also.
Kenyi says he's heard so many gunshots, they no longer bother him.
This thing has been happening here several times, and gun is not easy for me also, because it is always happening.
Kenyi says he instead struggles with more prosaic challenges in the underdeveloped country, where there are few roads or other infrastructure.
We have no good field, and secondly also we have no facilities for training. We are supposed to train in high altitude, and like Juba here, we have low altitude, so it is a bit hard also for us.
Challenges aside, Kenyi believes sport is one way to unite his broken nation. The war has deeply divided South Sudan along ethnic lines.
My message to my fellow South Sudanese, my brothers and sisters who are outside, is that let us be united and let us be together, that together we can build this nation, and let us be united. Yeah, we carry the flag of South Sudan for peace.
Despite athletes like Kenyi, peace remains elusive in South Sudan. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Juba.
And as you heard Jason mention in that report, five other South Sudanese athletes who are training in Kenya will be competing in Rio under the first ever refugee Olympic team. The International Olympic Committee says it hopes the team will be a symbol of hope and a reminder of the magnitude of the global refugee crisis. For VOA, Lenny Rivaga went out to Ngong, Kenya, where some members of the team are training, and has this report.
The phrase "Breakfast of Champions" has taken on new meaning here at the Tegla Larupe Training Center for refugee athletes. Five of these athletes, now munching on a nutritious meal of bread, fruits, and tea, will represent refugees around the world at the Rio Games this August. All five originally come from South Sudan. Runner Rose Natike Lokonyen was just 4 years old when her family fled ethnic conflict in the eastern part of the country. She has lived at the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya for the past 16 years. She thinks of her two youngest brothers often. She had to leave them at Kakuma to come here to train.
I hope I'll do well and get some gold or silver as well if I win. Then I really miss my sibling because since we came to Kakuma, we came together with our parents, but they left. Then I stay with them as well. And here, these are my two siblings whom I took them. They are the youngest one, and these are the two boys who are underage, and now I leave them alone.
She says there are good days and bad days in training, but she was headstrong from an early age. She remembers her father punishing her for playing soccer.
When I do escape, going to the field, after coming to the field, he do beat me. In fact, I really miss him now because he was just looking after me. So he didn't want me just to participate in any sport, but I insist myself doing that.
The team has a tough training regimen. Every morning, they start with stretching exercises, which last for 45 minutes. Then the team runs for about 2 hours a day. Lokonyen's event is the 800 meters. It may be no accident that the five refugee Olympians that Kenya is hosting will compete in track and field events. This training camp is named after Kenyan marathon runner Tegla Lorupe, who holds several world records. Jackson Kemoi is the manager of the Olympians training camp. He is hopeful about the prospects in Rio.
They had good time in our trials, so that's the special thing they have. But another thing, they are also disciplined. They are also disciplined, and that's what we needed most. These are the best guys, and they are persevering in the camp since September last year up to now.
Lokonyen and her teammates had to flee their homes years ago. Now they will run for gold. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Lenny Ruvaga in Nairobi.
A total of 10 athletes, 6 men and 4 women, will compete on the Olympic refugee team. In addition to the 5 athletes from South Sudan, the others are Rami Anis and Yusra Mardini of Syria, who are both competing in swimming events, Yamas Kinde from Ethiopia, who will race in the marathon, and Popo Misenga and Yolanda Mabika from the Democratic Republic of Congo, who will take part in men's and women's judo competitions. And thanks very much to our Tadi Abeje for that information. And a Sunny Side of Sports shout out to Team USA, who has already set an Olympic record before the competition in Rio even begins. When the United States Olympic Committee announced the 555-member U.S. Olympic team roster this week, they noted that the team was made up of 263 men and 292 women. Now that marks the most women who have ever competed in Olympic Games for a single country. U.S. Olympic Committee CEO Scott Blackman said that the historic achievement of the women's delegation is a true testament to the strength and growing number of women's sport opportunities in the United States. So congratulations to the women of Team USA for making Olympic history. I'm Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Voice of America!
mates. Remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right. Give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively sunny man on the sunny side of sports, right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoja here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brila FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brila FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brilafm.net. I tell you this. It's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of
Well, the world has its sights set on Rio. There are some other big sports stories going on, including the PGA Championships, golf's final major event of the year. The 98th PGA Championships kick off today in the U.S. state of New Jersey. And with a look at what's to expect, we go to our Jonah Haskell. Sporty greetings, Jonah.
Sporty greetings, Andrew. The final golf major of the year began earlier today as the first groups teed off and took to the course. That major, the PGA Championship, is being played at historic Baltusrol Golf Club, which originally opened in 1909 and has hosted multiple U.S. Open tournaments and one previous PGA Championship. American Jimmy Walker is the early leader at 5-under through 14 holes, with Argentine Emiliano Grillo at 4-under, while world number 7 Ricky Fowler is a few strokes back at 2-under. World number 1 in last year's PGA Championship winner Jason Day is off to a decent start, having shot 2-under through 11 holes, although he is, quote, running on empty, end quote, after being at the hospital until 2 a.m. last night after his wife suffered a bad allergic reaction. Meanwhile, Phil Mickelson, who came so close to winning the British Open last month, has had a rough morning, shooting 3-over through the first 9. World number 4 Rory McIlroy, who's playing with Mickelson, is also at 3-over. British Open champ Henrik Stenson of Sweden will be teeing off later today, and if he can play the way that he did in Scotland, he'll be one of the main favorites to capture the title here in the U.S. American Jordan Spieth, who hasn't had a great year after bursting onto the scene in 2015, is still ranked 3rd in the world and has been picked by many to recapture his winning form at Baltusrol. But Spieth will have plenty of competition, including from dark horse picks Brent Snedeker of Sweden and Englishman Matthew Fitzpatrick. Look for those two to potentially surprise many people and contend for the first place spot. In other PGA Championship news, the Long Drive contest was held on Tuesday, and South Korean golfer Byung-Hun An came out on top after launching a massive 347-yard drive. The aforementioned Rory McIlroy came in a close second, missing out by just 2 yards as he drove 345 yards. After the contest, Rory said that he was gutted by the loss. Perhaps he'll use that as motivation to win the actual golf tournament. The PGA Championship continues over the weekend and wraps up with the final round on Sunday. I'm VOA's Jonah Haskell. Back to you, Andrew.
Thank you very much, Jonah. And joining us now in the studio is Dan Friedel, who's here to talk about the latest trends in the sports world. Sporty greetings, Dan.
Hi, Andrew. How's it going?
It's going well. What's trending out there in sports world?
Well, I wanted to mention the trending story from yesterday that was related to the news coming out of the ALS Association. ALS is the degenerative brain and spinal disease that was a trending topic for most of the summer of 2014 when people were participating in the Ice Bucket Challenge. It's a sports-related story because the couple of guys that started that trend, one of them was Pete Freitas, who was a baseball player in Boston growing up. He went to Boston College and played a little professional baseball abroad before he was affected by the disease in 2012. So the sports connection really helped drive that fundraiser. The ALS Association raised over $100 million thanks to the help of sports luminaries like LeBron James and business leaders around the world. And the news yesterday was that the ALS Association had funded a research breakthrough based on that money that is helping scientists understand ALS and maybe get closer to finding a cure. So that's some good sports-related news.
Absolutely. And even the disease ALS is also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, of course, named after the great baseball player whose career and life were tragically cut short as he suffered from that disease. I remember seeing on, you know, everywhere, Instagram, Twitter, you name it, sports stars. I know Roger Federer was one of them, which was very strange to see him. He seems to usually be very stoic, dumping a bucket of ice water on his head. But it was a great cause that a lot of people participated in.
Did you participate?
I did not participate. Unfortunately, no one asked me to participate. So
if you look up Dan Friedel on YouTube, you might see me with the bucket of water on my head from 2 years ago. So check that out.
That's something for our listeners to check out for sure. So Dan, what else is trending?
So that's one sports story. Actually, I wanted to remind our listeners, most of the people who are listening to this show certainly speak English well, but if you're looking to improve your English, you can go to VOA's Learning English website, which is learningenglish.voanews.com, where we do have many of the sports stories that you hear on the Sunny Side of Sports in a little bit easier to understand writing style and listening style. Including the story that we just heard about the refugee runners from South Sudan training in Kenya. We also have a story about a trio of American runners, distance runners, who will be at the Rio Olympics, who were born in Kenya but are on the U.S. Olympic team because they signed up for the U.S. Army after they ran competitively in college in the U.S. So that's also another story that I encourage our listeners to check out on the Learning English website.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because the Learning English website really is a great resource for these stories. And I think it's going to be a great resource as we go into Rio as well. You guys planning on covering that, I'm sure, extensively?
So one story that I'm working on today is a call out to a story we mentioned earlier this week when the Australian delegation decided they weren't ready to move into their Olympic housing. The news coming out of Rio is that the Australians are moving in finally.
So what changed?
Their protests were heard by the organizing committee in Rio, and both the head of the Australian delegation and the Rio mayor have kissed and made up over their quips about the Australians maybe being more comfortable if a kangaroo were present.
Yeah, that was the quote from the Rio mayor that on social media, a lot of people ran with that.
So the Australians gave the Rio mayor a stuffed kangaroo, and the Rio mayor gave the Australians a key to the city and said that after Brazil, he'll be rooting for the Australian team to do well in the Olympics.
Okay, so the Australians have already won. You know, we talked about the women on Team USA. They've already set a record. The Australians have already won because they got a key to the city. So
they can go back anytime and access whatever building they want, I guess.
Go into American Stadium and just open that right up with that key if they want to.
So a couple other quick notes, sporty notes I wanted to bring up. Tonight is the MLS All-Star Game, and unlike in some sports where they just pick the best players and make two teams, like the West versus the East, this is the 12th straight season that the MLS All-Stars are playing a big European club. So tonight in San Jose in California, the MLS All-Star team, which is actually kind of an interesting international mixture itself with players like David Villa and Andrea Pirlo playing, against Arsenal, the big English team Arsenal. So we'll see who comes out on top between the Arsenal squad and the MLS All-Stars.
That's a cool way to do it. I like that. And that'll be something to watch for sure. Well, Dan Friedel, thank you so much for joining us, as always. And that wraps up the July 28th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer Nick Ivanov, and thank all of you out there in Radioland for tuning in. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On February 24, 1942, one of the darkest days of the Second World War, radio listeners in Axis-occupied Europe heard this announcement. Daily at this time we shall speak to you about America and the war. The news may be good or bad. We shall tell you the truth. For nearly 75 years, VOA has kept that promise. It was a promise reaffirmed on July 12, 1976, in the VOA Charter. given by the U.S. Congress and signed into law by President Gerald Ford. The charter provides, first, that VOA will serve as a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news, and that news will be accurate, objective, and comprehensive. Second, that VOA will represent America, not any single segment of American society, and will present a balanced, comprehensive projection of significant American thoughts and institutions. Third, that VOA will present the policies of the United States clearly and effectively, as well as responsible discussions and opinion of these policies. The Charter's first principle protects the journalistic integrity of VOA news. No official is allowed to pressure a reporter to spin a story in a certain direction. The second ensures that the diversity of America, from sea to shining sea, from Muslim to Christian to Jew to non-believer, from universities to factories to think tanks to Hollywood, is represented. And the third guarantees the world knows where the United States government clearly stands on important issues of the day and why. On the Charter's 40th anniversary, Amanda Bennett, director of the Voice of America, spoke of its enduring relevance.
The VOA Charter has never been more important than it is today. The world really needs a reliable and authoritative source of news and information, which is what the VOA Charter intends us to be.
The Charter remains the Voice of America's lodestar, guiding its mission to present the truth and, as Director Bennett said, to reflect all sides of the American discussion.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Party convention is a critical part of the American electoral process. VOA correspondents are there, reporting the latest developments.
Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Jim Malone, VOA News, at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
Tune in to VOA's extensive, up-to-the-minute coverage of the U.S. presidential election. VOA.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African music mix plays only the best.
Yes, sir. Two-Face. NATO C. Hey.
Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.